Hi, it's Charlie Connolly here. I write every week in the New European on books and literature and great European lives. If you'd like to enjoy more from the New European, you can join us by subscribing at theneweuropean.co.uk/subscribe. That's theneweuropean.co.uk/subscribe. Great European Lives. From the New European. Ev Curie. 6th of December 1904 to the 22nd of October 2007. It was a cold evening in Paris on the 12th of February 1926 when the cream of city society made their way to the Salle des Agricultures on the Rue d'Athènes. All cloche hats, fox furs, buttonhole carnations and clouded breath. When the doors had closed and everyone was seated, the lights dimmed and applause drowned out the hubbub of conversation. A young woman with bobbed black hair walked onto the stage, laid one hand on top of the piano, dipped her head self-consciously, swished the hem of her black dress forward and sat down on the piano stool. She was perfectly still for a moment, lifted her hands onto the keys, and picked out the opening notes of Beethoven's 32 variations in C minor. Ev Curie was 21 years old, and already renowned throughout the city and beyond for her beauty, her style, her musical talent, and her name. The daughter of double Nobel Prize-winning scientist Marie Curie, she had, unlike her sister Irene, decided against a life in the laboratory, to pursue instead an artistic calling. Ever since she was a child, she had played the piano like a dream, enough to secure recital and concert bookings throughout Europe that drew appreciative crowds and glowing reviews. The Beethoven led to a selection of Chopin, before, according to the correspondent from the Tatler, in Schumann's Scène d'Enfant, she absolutely wiped the floor with us, and then, as a finish, showed us what she could do with Liszt. She was called back again and again. She simply couldn't leave the hall. As the applause washed over her, Curie responded with shy dips of the head. Looking out over the sea of faces that glowed in the dim light from the stage, she felt as if Paris itself was laid out before her. She didn't know it at the time, but this would be one of the last occasions on which she would perform for the Parisian public. 14 years later, to the day, her face was on the cover of Time magazine, not as a pianist, but as the best-selling author of a biography of her mother, published in 1937 to wide international acclaim, leading to a lecture tour of the USA. That week she was also Eleanor Roosevelt's guest at the White House, where, as head of the women's division of the Commissaire Général à l'Information, the Office of the Commissioner of Information, she answered the First Lady's questions about life in France, a country at war, fearing invasion. "The best job women can do in France is to keep the country alive while the men are away," she told Roosevelt during a four-course dinner given in her honour. 4 months later, in June 1940, Curie sat sharing slices of smoked sausage in the overcrowded smoking room of the SS Madura, a P&O liner evacuating British citizens caught in France and French people vital to the war effort in the tense days between the Dunkirk evacuations and Hitler's arrival in Paris. Curie had left the city she loved a week earlier in a slow-moving procession of cars with suitcases tied to their roofs, all heading south, most with little plan or idea as to where their journey might end. Curie at least had a purpose, to join what would soon become the Free French Administration in London, and she had travelled to Bordeaux with a handful of colleagues for passage on the Madura to link up with de Gaulle in England. The ship was designed for fewer than 400 passengers, but more than 1,300 had squeezed aboard. Crowded onto the decks and into corridors, sleeping wherever they could. 2 days later, at the end of a voyage in which the ship was attacked by German planes, Curie disembarked at Falmouth, unsure whether she would ever see France again. A year later, as she became a high-profile spokeswoman for the Free French, the Vichy government confiscated her Paris home and cancelled her French citizenship. Curie threw herself into her work on behalf of France, broadcasting to Europe on the BBC, lunching at Chequers with Churchill, travelling to Scotland to meet with Polish troops, and early in 1941 returning to the US to help publicise the plight of her nation. The International Herald Tribune engaged her as a war reporter, and for the next 2 years she stayed on the move to Nigeria, Iran, Iraq, the Soviet Union, Burma, India, China, a whistle-stop global hop of some 40,000 miles that produced a collection of her writings published in her 1943 book Journey Among Warriors, an extraordinary account of the human and global faces of the war. She met ordinary soldiers, including one German prisoner who demanded to know what Pétain, the puppet Prime Minister of Vichy France, would make of a French woman working with the British. She met Gandhi, whose creed of non-violence irritated her, particularly when it came to what she called the Poles, who, by their heroism on countless battlefields, kept their invaded country alive. The Poles who had even accepted to fight at the side of the Russians, their former oppressors, in order to liberate their fatherland. He dismissed the Poles, not without disdain, by saying, "They are a race of fighters who have not the slightest notion of what a philosophy such as non-violence consists of. To fight is their only way of expressing themselves." Eve Curie was half Polish. Curie was born almost exactly a year after her parents were awarded the Nobel Prize for Physics, in recognition of their work in the field of radiation. Before she was 2 years old, her father Pierre was killed, falling in front of a horse-drawn cart in Paris in the spring of 1906. Her mother was consumed by grief and threw herself into her work, Eve's and Irène's kindly paternal grandfather playing the chief parental role in their upbringing. In 1921, she travelled with her sister to the US when their mother was invited to make a lecture tour. Already showing signs of the illness that would kill her, Marie Curie found the US overwhelming and exhausting, often making it necessary for Eve and Irène to stand in on her behalf, attending dinners given in their mother's honour, accepting her honorary degrees at academic institutions. The American press became smitten with Eve in particular, christening her the girl with the radium eyes. She graduated in science and philosophy in Paris in 1925, but chose not to follow her mother and sister into the laboratory. When Irène and her husband were jointly awarded the 1935 Nobel Prize for Chemistry, Eve would spend the rest of her days joking about being the black sheep of the family. "You are sure it is me you want, and you're not mixing me up with my sister by any chance?" she asked an interviewer in 1972. "I am the only one of the family not to have won a Nobel Prize, you see." Curie fell into writing almost by accident. When Irène married fellow physicist Frédéric Joliot in 1926, Eve became effectively Marie's permanent carer. A career's worth of exposure to radioactive material had left the discoverer of radium terminally ill with leukemia, a condition that would also kill Irène. But Marie Curie accompanied her daughter on concert tours and lecture tours until she became too ill and frail to travel. Eve's biography of her mother, Madame Curie, was published 3 years after Marie's death in 1934 and became an international bestseller, translated into more than 40 languages. Generations of women would cite Madame Curie as their necessary inspiration to follow their calling, rather than settle for the life of a housewife and mother that was expected of them. Eve Curie did make it back to Paris, almost as soon as the Germans had left. For the first 4 years after the liberation, she ran a daily newspaper, Paris Press, and in 1952 became an advisor to the Secretary-General of NATO, relocating to New York. 2 years later, at the age of 50, she married Henri Labouisse, who had become US ambassador to Greece and in 1965 executive director of UNICEF. Ev and her husband travelled together to more than 100 countries for the organisation, and in 1965 Henri accepted the Nobel Peace Prize on UNICEF's behalf. Once again, Ev had found herself in the Nobel orbit. She lived to the age of 102 and was awarded the Légion d'honneur a year before she died. "I feel honoured, I feel proud," she said in her acceptance speech. Her 100th birthday had been marked by a visit from Kofi Annan and letters of congratulation from George W. Bush and Jacques Chirac. But, according to her stepdaughter, Eve Curie never shook off the guilt that she was the only member of her family to escape a life working with radiation and its deadly consequences. As she carried the Curie name to all parts of the world, its legacy never stopped weighing heavily upon her. Great European Lives is brought to you by The New European. It's written and presented by Charlie Connolly, and the series producer is Steve Anglesey.